Welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by the Canadian actress and producer from projects like Smallville, Burden of Truth, and Poulon, a documentary that she is producing and is currently in post-production, Kristen Crook. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Kristen.
Thanks for having me, Jordan.
So your high school drama teacher convinced you to try out for a role in a CBC show after a casting director got in touch with the school. And this was how you ended up getting the role in the show, Edgemont, which kickstarted your acting career. Was acting something that you always knew you wanted to do, or did it sort of find you?
I always loved acting. I mean, I was that kid who would get the community kids together and put on a play. Although I think part of it was I just liked being bossy. So I loved organizing groups and I, you know, put up dances or whatever. I loved bringing people together and making stuff, normally in performance. But acting was never really a career path that seemed viable in any way, and indeed was not anywhere near the top of my list of options. I mean, like I was going to go into psychology, just it wasn't going to be my path. So that being said though, I mean, acting was the thing that made me the most happy. Like drama class was the class that I looked forward to the most and was the place where, as a kid who was super, super shy and also was in a family that wasn't super like emotionally expressive, acting was the thing I could do to kind of release all of those feelings and feel like I could express. So it was something that I loved doing, but I never would have gone out there and pursued a career if it hadn't literally come to me and said, "Hey, here is an opportunity for you."
That's so interesting. So you're taking university classes now, and it seems that cultivating knowledge has always been a priority for you. How important do you think it is as a performer to have that desire to learn?
I think it's very important. I mean, that's not why I do it, but I do think that for any of us that are making things, learning is so important. We're constantly exploring different careers, different people, different visual kind of mediums. We're looking at the world deeply. It's the point of what we're doing. We're telling stories. So for me, that's very important. Also, sometimes you're working on shows that don't encourage that kind of, you kind of have to shut down your brain a little bit more. So I find that when you're a working actor, it's sometimes beneficial to have other interests to keep engaging your mind.
Right. That makes sense. but for roles, do you ever find, like, I don't know how you prepare for roles, and that is something that I'm going to ask you about, but as far as preparing for a role, how much research do you do into the different characters? And is that something that's more breaking down the script and finding the emotional kind of core of the characters? And all, I mean, I'm sure you do that as well, but do you do research? Do you do readings? Like how do you approach that?
I think it always depends on the character. I think for someone like Joanna Chang on Burden of Truth, she's a lawyer. So I think that takes a certain amount of research to understand a person. Also, that show deals with contemporary issues. So we're always looking at something that's going on or has taken place in the recent past. So learning about those things is really helpful. I think even for a show like Beauty and the Beast, in the beginning, you know, I did a lot of research into being a detective, what that life is like. Did all of this come to be important in the end? I don't know. But, you know, it was really great to sit down with an LAPD female detective and what was that like for her and how did that affect her relationships and the way that she perceived the world and how she engaged in the world. That was all, and even learning simple stuff like how do you hold your weapon, how do you move through a room, that kind of research is really important. Otherwise, I think you end up looking ridiculous, and you do yourself a disservice because you can't get to the same depths as you can if you get as much information as possible. I work with an acting coach sometimes called Deb Aquila. She's a casting director also, but she's incredible at building character, and we'll just sit and build like she'll do a ton of research and she'll think of things I wouldn't have even thought of researching. Like even if you have a certain amount of pain and a certain injury, how does that manifest in your body? And, you know, how did even the painkillers you take to deal with that manifest in your body? So it's like really, that part's so fun. And I think that's why I love school too. Just the research and the like learning as much as I can about a person, a place, and a time, which all play into the stories that we're trying to tell.
Yeah, for sure. And kind of going off of that, what kind of formal training have you done that you found helpful, or was it mostly like learning on the job? And yeah, how have you brought that into the way that you work?
I started working when I was 17. So my training prior to working happened in drama classes. So we didn't learn any technique in high school. I don't know if you guys did, like I didn't learn technique. We just kind of we picked scenes or plays and then we just built backstory and went from there. So I had no training. I learned to act for camera in the casting office. like, this is your mark. This is where you stand. Now act. And I was used to being on stage, so I was used to a certain amount of freedom, and that was all stripped away. Technical, as we know, is very, very important when you're dealing with a camera and lighting and all this other stuff. So I kind of learned on the spot, and it was really awful, and I felt terrible, and I'd go home and I'd cry at the end of the day. It was just the worst. But through it, I kind of picked up technique I would have learned if I had actually gone and learned technique. I just did it in a way that was a lot more embarrassing, I think.
I mean, but yeah, I think there is a certain merit to also learning on the job as well. And I mean, unfortunately, you did feel that it was embarrassing, but I think it is interesting, like having to learn on the job, because I think there is definitely a certain merit to that, as far as like working with people that maybe have more experience than you and not necessarily other beginners in a class, and learning from them. That definitely sounds like it is just as important, it is doing that work. But how do you approach characters? Because you've done both TV and film work. How do you approach your characters in television, which tend to have a slower character progression because it is long form, versus something in film or, you know, theater, something short form, where obviously the character progression is quicker and more defined?
Well, it's funny. I haven't done a feature in such a long time, and I kind of, talking to you right now, it makes me want to do it again because my process has changed so much over the years. And I think the difference is kind of embedded in your question, which is in either a play, or which I haven't done since high school, or in film, you have a complete script. So you can take the text and you can literally go, this is my text, and I can interpret from here. You can build whatever backstory you want. It's never going to bite you in the ass. You can do everything and play it and kind of craft whatever the arc is you want to craft. In TV, it's much harder to do that. And I really struggled with that in the beginning. Through Smallville, I never understood I didn't know that I could just build a made up backstory and then just adjust if they wrote something that revealed something that was other than what I had made up for myself, just to give myself something to play. And I didn't understand that it was my job to do that, and that I worked in tandem with the writers in that way, that whatever I built, they would respond to. I thought that I was supposed to take what I was given and just use that. So I always felt like at a loss. So now with TV, I feel very much, it's kind of, I'm in a good position with the show I'm on now because I'm also a producer on it and I've been in the show since development. So I got to build her. I got to build her with Brad, and we got to create her together, create her life history. And that's not going to suddenly change on me. So I got to develop it in a certain way. And in TV, it changes because what you're doing is you're not making a false ending. You're constantly taking a person as they grow. So you go through their ups and downs and you just take this this kind of living, breathing entity and throw them into all these different circumstances to see how they respond and react. And then hopefully if they go through enough of a like bump up against something, they'll either, you know, change and we present something somewhat hopeful, or they don't and it's somewhat tragic.
For sure. So kind of going off of the preparation process, can you walk me through your process, especially in TV, like when you get a script, how do you break that down? And is it something that you communicate with the writers and directors about beforehand as you're prepping it? Or, you know, how do you do that prep job, I guess?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the show. Now, again, with Burden of Truth, I'm in a different situation. Let me think of like Beauty and the Beast, which I was less involved in. Beauty and the Beast, I got a script and I would basically read it and then start, you know, looking at like what I think the basics are, like what do people say about the character? How does the character, what does the character say, but versus what the character does, like look for hints into their emotional depth. And then also, like, why did they choose the career that they did? What are their socioeconomic circumstances? What were their parents like? What was their education like? What traumas do they have? Because every character has traumas. My characters normally have a dead parent or two, or at least an evil one. And then from there, if I'm with showrunners or a showrunner who is responsive, I'll get into a conversation. That isn't always an option. If that isn't an option, then you just build it as best you can because you've auditioned normally. In many circumstances, you've auditioned for the role. So if you've auditioned, they like your interpretation and you can take that and run with it. For a lot of my roles, I haven't auditioned, so it's better for me to talk to somebody. So, because I come on set and I'm like, this is what I'm doing, hope it's okay. And so that conversation starts to shape even more. And then we kind of build off each other if it's a nice collaboration. If not, you just do your job as best as you can and then respond to feedback and respond to scripts as they come in. So I'll take the script, talk to the people, and then I'll build a very rich, I like pulling from the character's life. So I build as rich as I can a life for them. Things that make me angry and sad, and I can feel it from a moment in their past. So if I'm having an interaction with a lover in a scene, I am able to know my first experience with sex, what my relationships have been like in the past. Like I can feel all of those things and bring that into the scenes that I'm going into. And that's how I work best, is just as much in the base of the character as I can carry.
So how do you go about building that? Is that something that you just take hints from the script, or is it something that, you know, this interests you and seems like it kind of fits with the character? Is it a combination of things? Like, oh, how do you go about imagining that past for the character?
So actually, I've never thought about how I do that. I think, well, okay, this is going to be me excusing myself quickly. So I love psychology. As I said earlier, I would have gone into psych. It's something I'm really fascinated. It's my favorite part about building characters and why I love acting. And I spend a lot of time like just analyzing people and myself. So I guess I just see clues. Like if a person gets angry all the time about these things that I see in the script, what causes them to do that? What behavioral kind of pattern is that? And then I can kind of deduce from there, if that makes sense. Or if I want to create something for them, like a struggle, like I see that in the script, there's one thing that they're very clearly going for, whether that's acceptance or love or something more simple, money, whatever, then I can make myself understand why they would want that so badly. And then there's a whole, I mean, that's, I guess, where actors get to just choose, you know, why is this person doing that? And that's, I guess, the creative part of it. And that's all based on, I suppose, what's in my own psyche and my own experience of living.
That's so interesting. That's really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
So as an actor with a long and varied career, you've worked with many different casts and crews. So what makes a good working relationship with a director?
Yeah, directors are funny in TV because they come and they go. And some of them are weathered veterans And some of them are really new, and some have never directed a TV episode in their lives. So everybody's different, and at least I just see who's there. This might sound horrible, but I'll assess. Like at this point in my career, and especially if I've been on a show for a long time, I have a sense of who the character is and kind of what I want to do with it. So I'll assess a director and see if they understand the character, if we share the same goals for the character in scenes and stuff. And some people do and don't. Some people give me amazing, fascinating direction, and I will eat that up. And some directors say stuff, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so I will not do it.
Yeah, so if you don't, you know, trust the director or have that communication that is working for you, then how do you go about getting through that and finding the moment? Because I think some of it for inexperienced directors might just be that they have the right idea, but they don't know how to get that across. So how do you kind of, or maybe they just have bad ideas. So how do you, you know, kind of work through that and find what's right for the character? Because obviously, in TV, you'll have a better sense of who the character is than they might just coming on for a guest, you know, episode. So how do you go about working with the direction that you get, or working, I guess, against it in certain cases, and finding the right approach, I guess?
That's a very, very good question, Jordan. I'm not sure I've completely finessed this yet, but I do think for me, I evaluate it in the moment. And normally if a director's giving direction, it's because something isn't working for them. So even if the direction is not helpful for me, I know that something isn't working. So I know I have to change something, and I'll try and find the thing that isn't working, and I'll try and adjust. If I'm really lucky, there'll be someone who I trust implicitly. You know, your dad is actually one of those people. I would say like Michelle Latimer, who directed on Burden, could tell me anything and I would do it, because I believe that she's seeing something I can't see. I just trust that she's keeping me safe. Because some directors, you have to protect yourself because they might use something that will ruin what you're trying to do with the character. Anyway, the answer is I don't know, and it's a very difficult balance for me, because it's also my job to make sure directors feel confident and able on set, and to give them the position of power that they need in order to move the crew and to help everything get done. So I never want to like cripple a director. I want to make sure that they always feel like they have the space they need to do their job.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's a difficult position for sure. And I can see why that would be such a challenge. So kind of on the flip side, do you have any anecdotes of a great moment of a collaboration that you've had with a director? And do you want to walk me kind of through any great direction that you've received that you've, I don't know.
I just have like an anecdote that's not as specific as maybe you want, but I'm going to, because I mentioned her, I'm going to just talk about a moment I had with Michelle Latimer on Burden, where I had a scene that I had struggled with kind of the shape of it. And it wasn't my favorite scene, but it was a very emotional scene. And I was trying to find it. And it's Burden. We don't have a ton of time. Like we shoot a lot of pages and you don't have like the luxury of just taking forever to find it. And I was playing the scene and she'd be like, let's go again. And I'm like bawling my eyes out and whatever. And she would come up to me in a place of such vulnerability, like herself in tears, feeling the same thing that I am feeling, the same thing Joanna's feeling. And her empathy for what the character was experiencing was so profound that I felt like I could keep doing this scene forever, because she was there so with me, and so not just with me but with Joanna. Like I felt like she understood, loved, cared for this character, and that was a moment I've never had with a director ever. That was the only time I've ever experienced anything like that.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. Wow. But yeah, do you want to walk me through, because obviously we've talked about relationships with directors, but do you want to walk me through what makes a great collaboration with other actors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh, I think that's also all over the board, because just like any sort of relationship, everybody's different. I have come to think, again, because TV's more the thing I do the most, And that means I work with people for a long time, generally, if we're lucky. I think Star Slade said something. She took an acting workshop, and the person that was teaching it told her that it's about having like an intimate distance, like being able to be super vulnerable and close, but also have like a boundary. For me, that feels very true for working with actors. Like, you want everyone to feel safe to go there. At least I do. I know some actors like to push people and make them uncomfortable, but I don't work best like that. And if someone does, that's fine. But I find it harder to be there for that kind of an actor. But that kind of safety and closeness is important. Sometimes I feel like we get too close, and then you end up with like weird personal dynamics between casts that can cause problems. But really, I think it's about people feeling safe, at least from my perspective. That's how I want casts that I'm around to feel safe to go there, safe to try things, safe to, you know, mess up, safe to say they want to go again. Like, I just want them to feel comfortable. And I feel like normally people do their best work from that place.
That completely makes sense. So what is important, do you think, for crew members to understand about the acting process?
I think that mostly it's, for many actors, it's very sensitive. And this isn't true for all actors, but I do think, this is such a weird way for me to think about it, because normally I'm thinking about it the other way. Like, how as an actor is it important for me to understand the crew and all the jobs on the crew? So thinking about it about me is kind of a weird flip for me. But I do think it's just understanding that for actors, it's very vulnerable. And being vulnerable is so uncomfortable. Every actor, of course, is different, but that when you're working with them and around them, know that you can assume that many of them feel deeply exposed. So just to be sensitive of that. That won't be true of everybody, but I think that's a good starting point to come from.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, wait, I have one more thought.
Do it.
The other thing is, don't assume that they know how to be a technical actor and that it's okay to help them become a better technical actor with caution. Because we all need to learn. So if someone's brand new and they don't know not to drop their prop on their line, you can tell them that and teach them that. It'll help them in the future. And it just to do it gently, maybe not in front of everybody, just so that they know, and then they'll feel empowered.
That totally makes sense. That's actually a really good note to have. So as student filmmakers, I think working with actors can be very daunting because you don't necessarily have all of the vocabulary or a deep understanding of the craft of acting yet. So what advice could you give to young filmmakers when it comes to working with or directing actors?
I think that maybe getting to know each of the actors individually is important, and have confidence in your vision. I think actors really are there to serve a story, just like everyone else is, and they want to do that the best that they can. And I do believe that confidence is really helpful because you feel like you're in safe hands. And I think on a really simple level, don't say too much. If it's like directing actors, I think it's finding one or two things that you're able to identify very clearly and to present that to them. And every actor wants direction differently, which is a pain in the butt. But if you are clear on the things that you see and they're really great, then I think that's really helpful. Yeah, I think that for me, that would be those would be the best things to do.
For sure, that makes sense. And is there anything that you would say never say to an actor or be very aware of when working, like just things to be conscious of? Because I think, again, you know, especially as a young filmmaker, you can get so caught up in the technical side of the production that it can feel, you know, it can be hard to put yourself in it with the actors and be present for that. So is there anything that you'd say, you know, be careful of this or don't say this you know, how to be mindful, I guess, of that and the process so that you're not, you know, hurting the performance?
Yeah. I suppose, again, there are no hard and fast rules, unfortunately. That said, obviously some actors are fine with this, honestly, but line readings are always tough. You guys know that. And really to solve that, it's just like, I think assessing what motivation am I trying to go after, or what action am I trying to, you know, whatever, you know. And I think there's stuff like, I've had directors who just like to yell at me from the monitor direction because they don't want to get up and come to set, which is fine. And sometimes I'm fine with it, but it's also really frustrating. Hey, Kristen, or just my character name. Do this. So that maybe not so much, but there are some circumstances where you might need to, like maybe you're really far away. Some directors work on set and some directors work from the monitor. So I think that, again, no hard and fast rules, but just maybe it's the same thing I said before, which is be sensitive to the fact that actors feel vulnerable. They're vulnerable about how they look, about what they're doing, about messing up, about being laughed at. Like, they're just really sensitive creatures often. Dummies.
I mean, that's completely fair though. Cause you're putting yourself out there. So that makes sense. And I think that's great things to keep in mind. So kind of switching gears a bit now, you also produce, and in fact, you have your own production company, Parvati Creative Inc. So what drew you to producing originally?
I was frustrated with the stories I was seeing. I was frustrated with the characters that I was reading for. I was frustrated. And I wanted to make the stories that I felt were important. And the climate has changed a lot since I made that decision, and I don't feel as frustrated anymore. But that is what I just wanted to be able to tell my own stories.
That, again, totally makes sense. And I'm happy that you're seeing a shift in a positive direction. So your production company focuses on human-centric films as seen through a female lens. So what sorts of materials excite you as a producer, and what kind of stories are you really itching to tell?
I'm all over the map these days. We've been focused, Rose and I have been very focused on documentaries lately. So we have a documentary series that we're working on right now, and the documentary you mentioned in the intro, which we came on pretty late too, but hopefully we'll be done soon. Documentaries take forever, man. But they very much focus on these in particular, focus on like minority groups, people who are underrepresented, kind of heroes that you wouldn't normally see as heroes. Pulin is a woman who was both loathed and loved in India. She came from a really low caste. She was raped many times, and she took vengeance. And she took vengeance for women in many villages, and she became the bandit queen. She was very controversial and still is. If you talk about her, there are many in India who think she was horrible. She killed a lot of people. But then she also went to jail, came out, and became a politician and was assassinated. So this is a woman who never knew how to write, never knew how to read, and she had a crazy life. So that's a story that's very typical of something that we love, a story of a racialized person or a person from another community or background. Rose, my partner, is of Indian descent. So we're always looking for stories like that. We found a book that we love that's more geared towards middle ages, because I think the middle age group is lacking. They don't have as much. And this is something that we've wanted to do for a long time. Rose grew up first gen in Edmonton. So she was like the only Muslim Indian girl around, and actually had a very diverse group of friends. So we've been like trying to find stories like that, especially for a country like ours, where so many people aren't from here or whose parents aren't from here.
No, that's awesome. And I can't wait to see it when it does come out. That's amazing. Crossing fingers, yeah. So what would you say is the most gratifying part of producing?
I think it really is about being able to tell the stories that you want to tell. Like for me, it is burden. I picked it out of a pile from E1, and I feel so proud and excited that I get to champion something and make a show that is far from perfect, but is something that I love and I'm proud of. And I get to play a character that I never would get to play if I wasn't also a producer on the project. So that's really gratifying. It's really gratifying that you can, that I can like put my energy into something and see it come to fruition. And it's always different than what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, sure. Actually, something you just said, you know, getting to play a character that you wouldn't otherwise get to play. How has your acting, coming from an acting background, affected the way that you produce as far as like the characters and the narrative? Because I'm sure, as you said, you kind of got into producing from a place of frustration. So how do you like take those frustrations and those things that you want to see as far as, you know, the way that your characters are portrayed or the depth of them? Because obviously as an actor, we talked about this, you create these rich lives for the characters. So how do you bring that into your producing?
I can give you a, like, I'm going to come back to Burden because that gives me a really easy way to talk about it. With that show, it's very much that I can go and champion a story, an arc for a woman that is other than what I've seen portrayed. So there's a danger in this kind of storytelling where there's an unhappy woman, she meets a man, they have a child, and she, you know, gives up some of her career because she's too ambitious and then lives happily ever after. And I think it's a narrative that we've seen a lot and it's a narrative I really struggle with. So a show like this, I can take it and we can go, yes, her obsession with work is a little too much and it's too hard on her, but she's ambitious and that's a part of what she loves. She'll have a child and she'll love that child, but she still loves work. We can like look at marriage as a concept and find a new way to represent that. And I can also help focus the love story into areas of a relationship that I feel like I never get to see, which is skip the will they won't they and the heated passion of the beginning and move into the meat of a relationship and delve into that. And it's not the most exciting part, but I think it's so interesting. And I haven't ever really gotten to play that. Like anytime I've been on a show and the characters have gotten together, you find a way to break them apart. And then you create drama that way. And, you know, but I just want to get into it. What's it like in the day-to-day life? And as a producer, I can push that. And I can't as much as an actor.
So what would you say are some of the biggest challenges of producing?
Getting stuff made. I think it's just so I don't know. I don't feel like I am a capable producer yet. I will be one day. I'm kind of in the same boat as many of you guys, I think, that way. Students, I'm a student also. So I'm learning how to do this. I'm learning how to find projects, pitch projects, learn where to pitch them. I am useless when it comes to money at this point. So finding partners and collaborators who are good at dealing with the, you know, sales and things like that. And then eventually maybe learning it myself. The problem is I am not that ambitious and I get lazy and sometimes I'd rather read books. But I do think that really it's tough to get stuff made, especially in Canada. It's really hard. And I don't even live in the feature realm. And I think the feature realm is really, really tough. And I think for people coming up, I think you're in a better position in some ways because you get to learn what the landscape is now and adapt to that and build your skills in accordance with that. And you can kind of take over that way.
Yeah, for sure. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that. Speaking with, you know, producers that are more established on the show or people who have produced in the past that maybe that's not their main focus, have a different perception of the industry because they grew up in it at a different time. Mm-hmm. So it has been interesting talking with people that, you know, are at more of a starting point when it comes to that, to get to know a little bit more about where the market is today, which, you know, is vastly different than 20, 30 years ago. So yeah, so no, for sure. It's fascinating. So I have one final question for you before I open it up to my friends here. What advice would you give to someone who is just starting their career now and is aspiring to be in your position one day, either as an actor or as a producer, or if you want to talk about both?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think to me, it's always study. I think learning is helpful and practice. Just make stuff. Just constantly make stuff. Like when I see you, Jordan, making all your projects, I think that's really what it is. It's just constantly making things, trying stuff. Nobody sees it. I mean, who cares at this point? Learn what it takes to do it. And that's both for producing and acting. And I think for acting, there's a little bit more of a focus on humanity and people and life and being obsessed with what makes people tick and how they work. And that is also like, it's just an obsessive quality. I think read widely. I just think there's a lot of things, but make stuff, just keep making stuff, making things to the point that it becomes easy to make them and you're not scared to make them and you're willing to fail and have something just not work. I think that's just part of it. Instead of like being precious about it and only making the things that you think are going to be great. And then never, you know, I think you can destroy your, what you're setting out to do before you even start.
Have some freedom to fail, I guess. Yeah, for sure. All right. Awesome. So I'm going to open it up to my friends now. MJ, do you want to go first?
I would love to. So my question kind of revolves around the casting experience. Mm-hmm. I've asked people to be in my films, like my friends and things, but I've never set up like a proper audition. So mm-hmm. my question kind of ties in the learning aspect. How do I make sure my auditions are like an enriching experience and not mm-hmm. too daunting and are actually like really beneficial? And how do I find the right actor for my film?
Well, that's a hard one, but I do think so. So like I said way earlier, Deb Aquila is an acting coach of mine, but she's also a casting director. She's a big casting director in LA. And I love auditioning for her. I love auditioning for her. And I hate auditioning. I hate it so much. So I don't, what does she do? She creates a space. So even when you enter into the office feels safe. Some places have like weird arrows or actors don't do this and actors don't do that, you know, or you always have to sign in and you just feel like a weird robot, but she makes it feel like you're a human who's there to do a job that's important. And then when you go into the room, she's warm. She cares about you. So she'll say hi and she'll ask how your life's going generally. And then she reads the material with us. And it's fine if you don't choose to do that. She's just so lovely at it. And so she's there with me, reading the scene with me, and she gives really wonderful notes and she'll let me do it again. Like never am I in and out. There's a breath and time to like build the scenes and try something different. And there isn't always time to do that. And maybe the person comes in and you're like, this person is not right at all. Sometimes you can see that within a second. But from my perspective, auditioning for her is lovely. I also auditioned for another acting teacher whose name I can't remember, which is why I'm looking around my office, for Larry Moss. I auditioned for Larry Moss, who was going to direct something. And that was the most fun I've had an audition. Like we went in and spent 45 minutes and he would just throw random stuff at me. Like, try it this way. Think about it like that. Focus on this. And we would just, basically it was an acting class. So that was fun. I wouldn't suggest you do that though. How do you pick the right person? That's tough because when you audition somebody, some people are great at auditioning and then terrible on set. And some people are terrible at auditioning and great on set. And it's a gamble. I think some people have a spidey sense about people and I think they develop it over time. But I think especially at this point, you're gonna have to work with somebody. So it's gotta be someone who can take your direction and somebody who you enjoy being around, I think. But I don't know the answer to that. If I did, that would be really great.
No, it's a hard question, I think, because obviously it's specific to the project, but I think that was a great answer. I kind of have a question going off of that as far as like personally, I don't know. How much do you like getting to know the director after you've been cast in a project before the project starts? Like, is it something where you'd want to like have a dinner to talk about the character? Is it something where it's more hands-off? Like, how much of a relationship do you like to build with a director?
I am fickle. I love getting to know directors as long as I'm not too busy. So in the span of a show, like if we're working on a TV series, I like having a coffee or something. I don't want to take too much time because it's time away from, although it is a prep, it's a part of prep. If it was a feature, I would absolutely spend time with the director and get to know them and build a relationship with them. Because I haven't done a ton of features, I haven't had that opportunity. And a lot of the features I've done have been male directors, maybe every single one. And so I don't feel as comfortable hanging out with male directors sometimes. Sometimes it feels weird. So I trust my kind of instinct on that one too.
I would love to get what's your most important advice on pitching?
I think from my limited experience, I mean, I've pitched in LA a bunch and everything. Be passionate about your project. Be clear on what it is. Don't talk too long. Don't be boring. Don't read from a sheet. Like, I think that's like, if you're excited and you know the show, and you have a deep understanding of it, I think it's enrolling people in the story and getting them to love it too and be able to see it. They have to be able to picture it and see how it will unfold. And that's the best I know. I mean, anytime I've pitched and people like it, they have hardly any questions and it's lovely. But also it's knowing the show well enough that you can answer a ton of questions. And sometimes the questions are disheartening. Yeah. And I think too, I don't know how much you've pitched, but sometimes it's easy to get in your head. Like, often you get a room full of deadpan people who have no expression. And so you can't tell if you're doing a good job or not. And for me, sometimes that makes me really nervous. So I think learning how to accept that your audience might not appear to be on board with you and still go ahead with the same level of like commitment and excitement. Does that help?
Yeah, for sure. That's interesting that it makes you nervous, because with acting, you have this whole crew looking at you, and in like complete silence, you have to be so vulnerable. So is that kind of like a comparison there between the two?
It's a little different, because with acting, the only person I'm really looking at is the person I'm in the scene with. And I can feel the camera operator and sometimes the focus puller, you know, that can feel them there with me because they're with me in the scene. Everyone else kind of blends into the background for me. And maybe it's because I have more experience acting. I don't trip myself up in the same way. I have less experience pitching. And so I still get like, oh, do they like it? Do they like it? I don't know if they like it. Maybe they don't like it. Maybe I'm terrible. I'm the worst, you know, that thing.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for answering those questions. Before we end this though, I did want to ask, I asked you to prepare five film recommendations.
Thank you for telling me to prepare.
Would you like to share those with us and why you chose those films?
Okay, fine. First, I am terrible at this, but I'm going to tell you some movies. So I realized as I was thinking about this that movies I love them. I love going to movies. I love talking about movies, but they don't stay with me that long, which is weird. But so Eric and I did, my boyfriend, did a whole horror movie thing a while back. I don't know if I ever told you about it, but we were watching like a whole slew of horror because I don't understand it. I've never liked it. Like, I just didn't get why people love it so much. And it's such a film nerd thing. Film nerds love horror. There's like something about it. And so we were recommended about 28 horror movies in like a succession, the classics through, you know, some new stuff, some slasher, don't like the slasher stuff. So I'm going to recommend some of those. Babadook. Have you seen the Babadook? It is terrifying. Not only that, it made me realize, I think what I love about horror at its best is it's always kind of an allegory. It kind of looks at, often it's an emotional experience that someone's going through and they personify it through some sort of monster or terrible thing. And the Babadook is, to me, it's kind of about guilt and about grief and about how you deal with the monster that consumes you and how you handle it. And it's scary because it's like a woman and her child, and then there's this crazy monster in the house. It's terrifying. So that one's really good. Then there's another horror called The Vanishing. It's called Spurlos. It is, oh gosh, I can't remember. It's Swedish, maybe? But that one is a slow, kind of terrifying journey where it starts with a man whose girlfriend disappears. She vanishes at a rest stop. And the rest of his life, he's obsessed with what happened to her. And he starts to pursue clues, essentially, to figure out what happened. And so the ending I can't give away, but it is the most satisfying and disturbing end where he does get the answers he was looking for, but not in the way that he wanted. But it's like a horror in that it's like suspenseful and slow and psychological. Then in the horror kick, the South Korean film called The Wailing, which is a long movie. It's like 3 hours long, but it's super weird. It's scary and a little gory. I don't even quite know what it's about. It's quite bizarre. There's definitely like tension between the Korean people and Japanese. Like there's like sort of that kind of historical tension between those peoples. But the basic premise is like, there's a, looks like a virus that's causing people to murder people. So it's like this weird thing that kind of looks at folklore, but pulls on American horror tropes as well. So that one was really cool. Two, as a kind of aside from the horror realm, from 2013, oddly, these are the two movies that pop into my head, and they're both from 2013. So maybe 2013 was like a big year for me with movies. But Amour, which I think it won the foreign language Oscar that year. That one, so that is a movie I wept at probably more than any movie. And I saw it in the theaters. And it's about an elderly couple who love each other. They're in their 80s. And she has a stroke and is no longer herself. And it's about aging and death and kind of confronting that and the reality of that and how hard it is. And then the final one is an Italian film, same year, called The Great Beauty. And it's really like opulent and lush. And that one is also kind of about confronting, it takes place in Rome. And it's sort of about confronting also aging in a way, which I think is a theme I really do enjoy. But that one's like bizarre and like so much stuff's going on and very visually engaging. But it's like basically about a guy, he's a writer. He was never that successful, but he was successful enough. He's 65, he's obsessed with staying young, you know, does a lot of Botox and keeps partying, but his life is sort of kind of, he's trying to find the beauty. Those are my five.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing those. And thank you for, you know, sharing your time with us and answering those questions for us. I really appreciated hearing more about your process, because obviously I know you personally, but we hadn't really talked about that. So that was really fascinating for me. But that is all for this episode of Film Kid Asks. Be sure to subscribe and feel free to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, or join our Facebook group. New episodes come out every Saturday.